Good evening. Welcome to the Celeri Report. Today is Thursday, July 9th, 2020. This is Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this week. My known travel schedule is I'm in Europe at least until mid-October. I'm headed to Basel on July 25th, then over to Lake Constance for 2 weeks, and then hopefully to Italy. I have some more stops in Switzerland as well, and then back to Basel for a workshop on August 29th, and then by a circuitous route back to the Netherlands on the first week of September. I am scheduled to go to a Pista Sofia workshop in Italy on October 9th to 11th, if that happens. On the website, please make sure you read the Minneapolis riots. It's a section of the Go Local first quarter wrap-up, and you can find the commentary on the homepage that will lead you to it. You have to be logged in. It's very important to understand that what we're dealing with is the equivalent of an invasion. And it's going to come more and more like a tsunami. And you need to look around and understand what that invasion will look like where you live. It's going to be different in different places. In California, it's the fires. In Oklahoma, it's Supreme Court decisions. It's looting in Minneapolis. But most of us are going to deal with it one way or another. And I want you to think about your place and what the patterns are and start planning now. There is a new poster on the website, and it really goes to the real heart of the devastation that the BLM is providing air cover. It's a picture of a very serious looking African-American businessman, and it's addressed to the chairman of the Federal Reserve, who in testimony 2 weeks ago with Secretary Mnuchin said he supported a cabinet secretary and Department of Reconciliation, supposedly to address the reparations and the ills of slavery and other harms done to African Americans. So this is addressed to Chairman Powell. So again, the face of a very serious looking sort of African American businessman. Chairman Powell, here is my bill for your proposed Department of Reconciliation. $260,000, $65,000 per person, missing money for a family of four. That's the first item. Second item, $240,000, equity and income destroyed by declaring my business non-essential. $300,000, residential and business properties harmed by looting and arson in riots, loss of insurance. And then $200,000, destruction of appraised property value from defunding of police. Total to date, $1 million. Forget the 18th century. Fix today's problems. From a Minneapolis CPA, taxpayer, business and homeowner, and father of two. Anyway, if you look at the harm that's being done right now, you know, all the talk of what's going on long ago is really air cover. And simply air cover, not just to do harm today to others, but to literally steal. We'll talk about Oklahoma in a second. If you have a group producing high-quality data on the damage done in your city by looting or protests, send it to customer service and we'll try and make more maps. We also have a new tune. It's a common on A Risky World. You can see it on the homepage. We should post this week a Food for the Soul podcast. Nina and I talked about Beethoven, this being the 250th anniversary of Beethoven, and a book review is up on the website for another Forrest Moretti book. I'm going through all of Forrest Moretti. Red Pill Gospel, this one, he describes it as being on Christianity before the Christians ruined it. We have a couple of special reports coming up. I've done a recorded one with Dr. Tenpenny on masks, and we're putting together a serious link collection. I've been waiting this week for her. She had promised to go through all the peer-reviewed articles, and I'm waiting for that link, and as soon as we have it, we'll put it up. And those links will also be part of the second quarter wrap-up best resources. Then Pete Kennedy tomorrow is going to be interviewing Congressman Massey on the Prime Act, so we'll have that up as soon as it's ready. Several subscribers also very concerned about local safety issues and local legal organization around safety, and I pointed them to two interviews we have done with Edwin Vieira, a constitutional lawyer and scholar, and those interviews are in the library, including one on his book, Sword and Sovereignty, on these exact issues. But he's agreed to come back this month to record, and so I hope to have that up sometime by early August. Again, Take Action Crowdfund. Thank you all. We've raised a nice sort of flow of money to the Children's Health Defense, Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, and then some Take Action Crowdfund money that we've used to support some of the various groups who are helping to highlight those issues and efforts. Anyway, but we really appreciate your donations. And just remember, whether you support any of those groups or the crowdfund or the groups locally, just remember to do what you can. If you're a new subscriber, we've had a fair amount of new subscribers over the last 2 months, make sure you've reviewed the welcome page and the navigation bar and tips and tricks. We've found that, you know, just a little familiarity with that content will really make a big difference in terms of enjoying and taking advantage of the website. Events. Unfortunately, we've had to cancel the event in Texas. You should all have your refunds. So sorry about that. That's a great group, and I was really looking forward. If for any reason your refund didn't come through, please make sure to let customer service at Solari.com know. Lake Geneva is on. Dr. Skidmore and his wife, Kate, John Titus, and then Darlene and Pete Heckman. Darlene runs our operations, and many of you know her through customer service, and her husband, Pete, is editor for our transcript, so he's very familiar with the content. So having Darlene, Pete, John, Mark, and Kate is going to be very special, and I hope you're going to enjoy that. We have gotten tremendous interest from people who are interested in gathering, sort of in being local hosts for gathering folks. We have approximately 15 locations in the U.S. and Canada so far, and Darlene's going to be back to you shortly to do some training and discussion, and then we'll proceed with sending emails to everybody in that area and inviting you to contact the host, and then the host can gather. We would much prefer to do private gatherings so people can meet and avoid the masks and social distancing and other New World Order obedience puppy training that's been going on. We'd rather not do any of that. We've already sent invites to all the Swiss subscribers, so the Swiss subscribers are off and running. Money and markets. I'm working off the Wednesday close. It's all total return for 2020 year to date. The U.S. dollar index still flat. It's up 32 basis points. Fixed income treasuries getting stronger again, 20.58% up for the year. It's just extraordinary performance for a long treasury. The intermediate up a little bit more than 10%. The bond aggregate up 5%. And junk down 7.36%. So finally, this year, junk is really reflecting its real risk premiums. S&P now says that the global banks will have $2.1 trillion of credit losses in the next 2 years. That is exactly what a debt entrapment looks like. And many of those banks will not be taking real losses so much as establishing creditor control. And that's how debt entrapment works. I'll talk more about it in the equity overview, but I posted a chart from the Visual Capitalist on the 10-year analyzed returns, so for 2010 to date, and it shows you performance in the U.S. markets of the different sectors. Again, the equities outperforming. The best performance was the dividend paying equities and small caps. And that doesn't surprise people looking for yield in the big companies buying the small companies. Small cap equities always do the best because the big guys are coming along and paying premiums to buy them. One noticeable thing you'll see in the chart is how poorly hedge funds did against most categories. So, you know, corporate bonds outperforming hedge funds. And it's not surprising that many, many are closing as we speak. Okay, equities, S&P now down 3.41% for the year, home builders down 3.35%, the European ETF down 13.18%, and the developed markets minus North America down 11.8%, Germany down 7.73%, China down 1.72%, now outperforming the S&P. We'll talk about it in a second. A lot of tensions between China and the U.S. this week. Emerging markets down 7.34%. The commodities index down 23.59%. Gold continues strong, up 17.43% for the year. Silver eking into the positive at 1.19%. And oil still really in the doghouse, down 60 to 89%, depending on which index you use. The stories, of course, the big story this week is the Supreme Court shifting Tulsa from state to federal control. This is a major decision. It's going to take a while for the reverberation to sort of work through the system. Let me just read a few comments from the Reuters description. The U.S. Supreme Court on Thursday recognized about half of Oklahoma's Native American reservation land and overturned a tribe member's rape conviction because the location where the crime was committed should have been considered outside the reach of state criminal law. This truly looks like one of those cases that was engineered to be a fix. The decision means that for the first time, much of eastern Oklahoma is legally considered reservation land. More than 1.8 million people live on the land at issue, including roughly 400,000 in Tulsa, Oklahoma's second largest city. Let me just skip to the bottom. A reservation is land managed by a tribe under the Federal Bureau of Indian Affairs and generally exempt from state jurisdiction. So what this means is that you'll hear all sorts of people crowing as though the land has been returned to the Indians. No, I would say it's been returned to control of the Scottish Rite Temple on 16th Street in the District of Columbia. You know, the Federal Bureau of Indian Affairs is now going to control. Let me just run through a couple stories. John and I talked last week about the Fed corporate bond portfolio. And the more I look at that portfolio, my question is whether or not it's being used to finance the telecommunications and other hardware necessary to launch what I'm calling the injectable credit card system. You know, that just adds more insult to injury. Sleaze Patrol, a professor at Columbia, wrote an editorial in Forbes pitching the idea that BlackRock should be able to pick the corporate auditors. What that would mean, given that BlackRock is running the going direct plan with the bevy of central banks, sort of bankers parked there, and is running a big Fed portfolio as part of sort of running the going direct, is we would now have essentially the BIS and the central banks running, telling all the corporations what they can and cannot do. It's totally, completely out of control. Shareholders lose all control whatsoever. It's outrageous. I mean, it's the most sleazy thing I've ever seen. But, you know, given what they're up to, big danger. There's a huge squabble over the New York AG's office, and the question is, what's it about? One of the things it was about appears to be getting Maxwell arrested. So they pushed the New York AG out. And the next thing you know, 9 days after they get them out, Maxwell gets arrested. And I suspect we could really see with Maxwell in custody, Maxwell certainly has the goods and could put the Clintons away if that's what Barr wants. So it's going to be very interesting to see what comes out of that. There are also a series of Wall Street cases, and the question was, did this have anything to do with Washington tampering with those? No way to tell yet. The Supreme Court, which has had a very busy week, has now ruled that Deutsche Bank has to turn over Trump's tax returns to the New York prosecutors, which is going to cause Trump a world of hurt in the middle of the campaign. Wouldn't surprise me if that's connected to Barr getting a hold of Maxwell and putting her in custody. So if Maxwell does a deal to go after, you know, the Clintons or a variety of people, they've got Deutsche Bank with Trump's tax returns ready to do God knows what through the New York prosecutors. If you think the campaign tensions are bad, the tensions right now between China and the United States are very significant. We see more carriers heading out to the South China Sea. Noises that China's rattling its sabers at Taiwan. The China-India tensions seem to have calmed down, but the British and U.S. are responding to Hong Kong. The Brits, as I said last week, have offered 2.9 million citizens of Hong Kong British citizenship. So China has steam coming out of its ear. But then China signed up their deal with Iran. It's quite significant, and it could have very significant global ramifications. The Chinese are going to get 25 years of major discounted oil, and Iran gets an infrastructure investment that helps it develop that oil, but also Chinese and Russian electronic warfare capability. That's quite a force field against the U.S. and Israel. And now we see noises from the Europe that Iran is in default on its nuclear deal. So the fight that's going on in every one of our neighborhoods is also, I assure you, going hot and heavy in the middle of Eurasia. Macron and Putin have been discussing new European security arrangements, so it's very interesting to see France talking with the Russians about security arrangements. It's interesting because how does NATO figure in that one? Europe is also working on a new competitive system to Visa and MasterCard. It's called the Pan-European Payment System Initiative, PEPSI. So whether it's the credit card alternatives or negotiating, the French and the Russians negotiating on security issues, you know, the cards are getting reshuffled. Every once in a while, I see reports of famine or the danger of famine in Lebanon, Syria, Venezuela. Venezuela has had very serious food security problems for several years now. I'm surprised, given the global shutdown of the economy, that more isn't happening. It could just be we're not hearing about it. But I'm, as you know, I'm very, very concerned about food security for everybody over the next year. There was a dialogue this week. Apparently, Seattle, the government, the city government in Seattle, did white privilege training to help their Caucasian employees overcome their sense of white superiority, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, a citizen read about the fact that this training had happened and so put in a Freedom of Information request and got copies of the materials for the training, and then proceeded to hear somebody else proceeded to tweet them out in a tweet storm of about 10 tweets. And what was interesting is this is like the Civil War monuments. What you have to understand is this has nothing. First of all, it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen a municipality spend money on. Just a complete waste of money. But here's the thing. If you are using a variety of strategies to push the middle class out in a way that you can pick the real estate up and the land cheap, I'm getting back to World War III. So the Bolsheviks are coming in and they want to pick up and steal the real estate and the businesses and the land cheap. So one of the things you have to do is you have to get the police out of the way and you have to get the local bureaucrats out of the way, because what you're going to do is very, very lawless. But of course, you're not just going to tell them you're going to come in and be lawless and do all these kinds of things. No. You know, so you have all these different strategies to put them in their place, put them in the corner, make them really scared, beat them up, abuse them. And it's projective identification. You accuse them of sort of doing, you accuse them of superiority, when in fact, if you look at your lawlessness and what you're about to steal and do, you're guilty of what you're accusing them of. The best defense is a good offense, right? It's projective identification. But it's very much asymmetrical warfare, because you're attacking somebody because they have a culturally superior attitude, which is ridiculous and irrelevant, but it's incoherent. It scares them. They don't know what to do, and they can't connect the dots between why you would be doing that to them and how they pick up real estate and land cheap. It's asymmetrical warfare. It's one of the reasons I keep saying you gotta map out how all the money works. Our hero this week is J.B. Handley, who has a blog. He's an author of a book on autism as a result of his son being autistic. He's a very successful investment professional. Anyway, but he's got a blog and a piece called Lockdown Lunacy, which is a collection and aggregation of his picks for best sources for the COVID-19. And it's really one of the best summary sources if you're looking for something that's done in a highly professional, matter-of-fact tone, and you want to use something like that on people who really don't understand what's going on. You need something that's very professional, very matter-of-fact. The other one I regularly refer to people is Swiss Policy Research has a COVID section, which is the same. So J.B. Handley, Lockdown Lunacy. He's also got an update now on Lockdown Lunacy, so he's got two pieces. They'll both be in our collection in the second quarter wrap-up. We can all use the best sources of very high-quality information. Our Blast from the Past is a collection I put together for someone who was very concerned about what was happening to their grandchildren. It's called Mind Control Tactics Used Against Children, and I consider this absolutely essential survival intelligence. I got really mad at an ally once whose family, they had a relative who had been tricked by entrainment. I said to them, did you brief them? Did you tell them that this technology exists? And they said, well, no, I don't share the conspiracy stuff with my family. And I said, wait a minute, your job is to protect your family. This is not conspiracy stuff. This is real. It's really happening. And what just happened to this relative of yours is really your fault, because you knew and you could have briefed her and you could have helped her protect herself. Because if you don't know this stuff exists, then you're going to fall prey to it. And if you look around America right now and around the world, America's much worse than Europe. We are watching family, friends fall prey to this, and anything we can do to protect them. And that means taking the time to make sure they really get briefed about how dangerous this stuff is. Now, the other thing I'm going to say, if you still have a TV or carry your phone around on in your house, you're just not serious. It's not a phone. It's a surveillance device, and it's a mind control device. Just remember, provide as little of your private information to your enemies as possible. We're all running around financing our enemies, and we're all running around carrying their spy devices. And you've got to understand, this is war. You know, it's funny, the British would say that the Americans won because the Revolutionary War, because they had the best intelligence. I don't know what happened to us, but we're losing World War III right now. And it's because we don't know how to manage the intelligence, both denying intelligence to them and improving our intelligence. We've got to get good at understanding mind control tactics and protecting our children and our loved ones from them. In Take Action, I'm going to promote the Take Action crowdfund again. Go to donate.solari.com and you'll find it all there. Sign up for membership at Children's Health Defense, sign up for the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, or send us money at Take Action Crowdfund. We'll use it well. Let's go to the movies. I watched Planet of the Humans, which was made by Jeff Gibbs, who's produced several movies with Michael Moore. Moore back Gibbs, and this is really a serious look at both natural resource use and environmental risks and how it relates to what's been happening with renewable energy. And it really underscores the movie's critical of the renewable energy movement. And it underscores the risk of jumping on board something without looking at the world on an integrated model. It's something I think a lot about, because most of the people that I have dealt with in the independent media don't want to look at a world on an integrated basis, because there's certain parts of the world that they don't want to look at or bring in, or, you know, they don't want to look at the black budget. They don't want to look at the UFO question. They don't want to look at the real governance issues. Gibbs leaves plenty of stuff out, but he really does make some progress on a meaningful basis at looking at an integrated analysis. And it's been interesting to me to see the kind of guff that both Gibbs and Moore have taken. One of the things they ask about is serious environmental issues, how all the environmentalists could have been doing all these deals with Wall Street for all these decades, and we haven't made any real progress. In fact, the environmental issues are going the wrong way. Now, as I said, I think he leaves things out, like they're spraying heavy metals over our head. He doesn't go all the way, but ultimately, that's what we need. We need an integrated analysis. If you want an example of what I'm talking about, take a look at my commentary, An Intelligent Conversation About the Environment. It was inspired by a discussion I had with an ally once upon a time who kept screaming at me that I had to come out in support of climate change. And I said, I'm perfectly happy to support climate change if I can understand it. But I have a whole series of questions of things that aren't integrated into the climate change analysis, and I need to be able to integrate. I need to have intellectual understanding of it, and I don't understand it. And I said, here are my questions. And he couldn't answer the questions. And he just kept screaming at me. And I said, look, I'm not going to support something if I don't understand it. So you're going to have to answer these questions. And he couldn't. And I said, you know, this is the last time I go through this. So I decided to write all the questions down. And I've never met a climate change advocate who, in fact, could address or explain those issues. Because so many of these different positions depend on pretending that a part of the world or a part of the problem doesn't exist. And that's how we get these ridiculous situations and of the kind that Gibson did a very good job of explaining in Planet of the Human. So it's free on the internet. You might, if you're interested in environmental issues, I recommend it. Okay, our interview this evening is part one of News, Trends, and Stories with Dr. Farrell. We had a lot to talk about. We did a video this time. I'm in the Netherlands and I didn't get to see Joseph for the first quarter, so we just decided, okay, let's do a video because we really spent a lot of time going through our News, Trends, and Stories section. If you haven't discovered our table presses for News, Trends, and Story, we collect the headlines every day. We're constantly, different members of the team are collecting and sorting. And it's through the watching the flow of what we think is important day to day to day, the patterns emerge. And it's quite a marvelous process. We collect them all up, we prune them, we go through them, we decide what the stories are, then Joseph and I talk them through. And when the process is through, we really have a remarkable understanding of the big picture always cuts out clear. And again, it happened this time. So I would really encourage you to check out the web presentation. You can just link in the commentary for tonight's discussion. You should automatically be logged in, but if you're not, just use your password. It's the same password for the wrap-up web presentations as for the homepage. Ask Catherine. So some subscriber input I wanted to mention first, this from a Phoenix supermarket. You wanted to know about shortages. We were out of Coors Light because there is an aluminum shortage and they can't make cans. Also a rolled coin shortage, so we cannot sell any to customers. We've had several realtors comment to us, one from Arizona, one from Tennessee, one from Colorado, about a rush of small businesses and families leaving the cities. Anybody who's selling homes in a relatively rural area, particularly in the heartland, is very, very busy. I've also watched several interviews with the governor of South Dakota who's talking about the extraordinary amount of businesses contacting their economic development department, a department trying to leave the cities and get to South Dakota. The first ask, Catherine, is somebody sent lunacy, saying, a terrific, highly documented article demolishes the COVID scam. Yeah, Henley's the hero of the week. It's clearly one of the best sources. Very clear thinking guy. Dear Catherine, thank you very much for your tireless effort in search of the truth. As a recent Solaria subscriber, I've learned an incredible amount from your presentations and Solaria reports. Do you know of an experienced healthcare practitioner who is well-versed in alternative therapies for cancer patients near, this is Southern California, Los Angeles County? The doctors and healthcare people I know have had to leave. The regulators have really pushed them out. What I would do if I was interested, the practitioners I would contact is looking for a referral. So either you work online with somebody or you, perhaps they know somebody still in Southern California. So I would contact Dr. Dietrich Klinghart's clinic and find out if there's anybody they could recommend. Jonathan Wright at the Tahoma Clinic, I would see if they also can recommend anybody. Nicholas Gonzalez, he's no longer with us, but has a foundation, and his old partner is still practicing. And if you check out the foundation, I'm sure you can find her name. She's in New York. I would go through Suzanne Summers' book, Knockout, and see if any of those practitioners are still in California. And if I was struggling with cancer, one of the books I would read is Anita Morani's Dying to Be Me. Kind of gives you a perspective on, I think, the most important strategy, which is really spiritual and coming to your own sense of what is the right pathway for you. I just finished reading and reviewing Thomas Cowan's book, Cancer and the New Biology of Water, which is very interesting, and I strongly recommend it to you. You can read the review at Solari. The book just comes with the most amazing healing energy. So I enjoyed it tremendously, and I think water is extremely important for anything related to health, so try that. Anyway, I would check with all, those are all excellent. Klinghart, Gonzalez's partner, and Jonathan Wright are all excellent doctors and healers, and see if they know anybody in Southern California. Thank you, Catherine, for the John Titus discussions. They have been really excellent, in my opinion. The July 2nd one really clearly laid out the financial criminal shift that is being accomplished using the COVID meme as a cover story. I'm glad you liked it. One person had trouble following it and sort of gave up, and I went back and listened to it, and what I realized is that John and I go through the nuts and bolts first. And so we're going through more of the financial detail. Then we emerge from that and we go into the bigger picture. So if you gave up on the first half an hour, I would encourage you to go back and listen, you know, start at 30 minutes in and listen, because I think you'll have a much easier time as we move into the bigger picture. And I'll remember that in the future. Remember, it's very easy to learn about the financial world, and the secret is every time you hear a word you don't understand, write it down, look up the definition, and learn that word. And I really find that mastering the global financial markets is a matter of learning about 100 to 200 definitions. And if you just look one up a week, it doesn't take that long, really, you know, a year or two until you've got your mind around most of it. Catherine, since many people rely on mass transit to travel in many cities in Europe, and with the social distancing being practiced, do you think e-bikes will become more popular as an alternative transportation? I would assume so. They're pretty popular now. And in fact, I'm planning on getting one eventually for when I'm here. So I just think they're great for trips. You know, if you go on a long bike ride, if you go on 30, 40, 50 miles, maybe you're fine, but you can also get tired. And so having an e-bike really makes sense. Remember, you don't have to use the electronic part of it or the electric part. You can just use it as a bike and leave the electric part for only if you get tired. Hey, Catherine, so the COVID numbers are exploding and the tyrant politicians are again closing down small business. Lots of people, now it's very interesting, remember, they're closing down our income, but they're not closing down their own income. Remember that. That's what you have to understand here. This is economic war. So we're paying the taxes that fund their salary, but they're closing down our business, but they keep getting their salary. You notice the out of balance of that? Lots of people who cannot work are panicking again. The COVID numbers are definitely being cooked like there is a COVID FASB 56. I was wondering what the flu numbers look like when compared to the COVID numbers. Surprisingly, the same flu numbers dropped to virtually zero. The COVID numbers grew. I combined the two charts that are hard to argue with. Maybe the flu virtually disappears every spring. Just wondering. Definitely not covered in the corporate media. The numbers game here is unbelievable. And here's what shocks me. If you look at the infrastructure of federal and state government, it is badly corrupted. And why anyone who, you know, if the federal government did $24 to $29 trillion of bailouts and there's $21 trillion missing, why would you believe it on anything? That's what I can never understand. I have no faith whatsoever in the quality of the data. It's interesting. There's a video that I tweeted out this week of a former state senator who's a doctor who questioned the practices very responsibly, and then he got targeted by the regulators. They're coming after him. And if you look at the speed and ease with which they did that, you know, it underscores the fact that the numbers are not reliable. I mean, you don't have to go that hard, that public, after one guy, unless you're standing on very thin ice. Hello, Catherine. I attended the lunch in Toronto at Rob Kirby's a few years ago and really enjoyed meeting you. I haven't given up encouraging you to visit Spain at some point, laughing out loud. I would be very interested in hosting a small group at my place in Victoria, BC. Subscribers on Vancouver Island might be interested. I would also be interested in hosting a small group at our place in Spain. No idea how many subscribers you might have. It's in Valencia. Meanwhile, endless applause for all the amazing material you provide for us. Oh, it's a twofer. Victoria and Spain. Wonderful. So Darlene will be in touch shortly. You're on the list. Is there a team working with Saleri to come up with a new economic model? My career paralleled yours. UBS, Warburg, Dillon Reed, University of Pennsylvania, Wharton, Goldman Sachs. I worked for Chief Financial Economist at Goldman for 5 years when GS was still private and wrote on housing market and money supply. Would love to join any group working on this. We were planning on starting that conversation at Lake Constance. It starts with sort of how does life work and biophysics work. And I've been collecting up books to read to help think about that. I'm sort of ready to start on that again. But I'm not sure to how to involve the network yet. But I hope after a week or two at Lake Constance, I'll have a better feeling. And I'll start to do more interviews that relate to those topics. So it's going to be an ongoing conversation, and it's going to go on, I suspect, for years, because this war is going to go on for years. So, but stay tuned, and I really appreciate your interest. Somebody sent in a link for Time for a Good Laugh, the Black National Anthem. You should know I feel a lot of grief over the Black Lives Matter ridiculousness, because I think one of the goals here is to provide air cover for renewed genocide in America and Africa. Again, see the poster that we put up this week. And my concern is that you see a lot of really solid African-American citizens being harmed and losing their businesses and destroyed. Now, I know we're seeing plenty of, you know, everybody else kind of businessman too. But I think the Black community is going to have a particularly rough time during this period. And I suspect they know it. I'm not in America to see it. But I suspect that they know that the Black Lives Matter is designed to make it easier to beat up on them. Dear Catherine, I'm a new subscriber. Just discovered you recently. What a gem. I very much appreciate everything you have to offer. My question, the lockdown and everything it involves has prompted me to decide to move out of the city, Montreal, and to the country, yet now I'm wondering whether I should take the leap and move back to Germany or whether I should stay in Canada. I'm bicultural and binational and can live in both countries. As a freelance translator, I can also make my living in either country. Do you know in which country I might have a better chance of evading ID 2020? I suppose mandatory or coerced vaccination is my biggest concern. In many ways, Germany is much fiercer than Canada in terms of contact tracing and mandatory masks. However, there is a beautiful and strong resistance movement in Germany. There is some here, but hardly as elaborate. I see more resistance in the U.S. for that matter. Canadians are too nice, it's true. That's really tough. I agree with you. There's a beautiful and strong resistance in Germany. And if you're in Germany, there's sort of greater selection of places to move to if you need. At the same time, Canada has a lot of rural places and rural areas. It's not a bad idea to hide out there, especially if you can work online. If you have children, I think you're much safer in Europe, or the kids are safer in Europe than they are in the U.S., and I'm not sure about Canada. Then you said, and while I'm at it, while I'm still here, if possible, please put me in touch with Solari people in the Montreal or Ottawa area. I would love to find and network with like-minded people here. So on your inspiration, I contacted some folks in Montreal, and I'll see if I can inspire up a local gathering host and we get something going. I agree. We've got to pull together in our places. Hey, Catherine. Well, they have figured out a way to spike the COVID numbers here in Texas. Now, this was the wonderful subscriber who sent me a link to the public health department explaining how they were going to cook the numbers. And it's so frightening when you listen to the details of what they're up to. And they mentioned the fact that they'd hired a contractor. So I went out and I got the information. They hired MTX, which now is doing, I think, about 12 states. And my guess is it's just a front for Salesforce. This is Salesforce. And it's scary. It's like the aliens have landed. And these folks are supposed to come up with 4,000 contract tracers, lickety-split. And when you look at how they're going to be turned loose on everybody with a series of definitions and tests where basically they can make anybody positive they want. And then they can make everybody in their home, their business, you know, they can lock down everybody. It's amazing. It's the most Orwellian thing you've ever seen. That link will be in the notes, and I strongly recommend taking a look at it because it's pretty frightening. I mean, basically, they're setting it up to go after anybody and anything. This is all going to come down to taxes, because if we pay government officials with our taxes, if we pay them to work in a way that destroys our businesses and puts us out of business, that can't work. So people can't afford to pay taxes to support schools where they can't send their kids. Or if they do send their kids, you know, they stick poison in their veins, they put poison in their minds, and they poison their attitude towards social interaction. So you just can't do that. I asked Matt Hale, who's been helping us with legal questions, if he would comment on, we'd had somebody write in about masks, and I put that question in some of their notes about whether they had the legal right to mandate masks. So Matt wrote back, and let me just read what he said. The short answer is probably yes. In other words, it's a state law issue, and the states have broad authorities to deal with emergencies. It is frankly going to boil down to your individual state constitution and state statutes and what that constitution or statutes allow a governor or mayor or government executive to do in an emergency. The 10th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which gives states all power, not specifically given to the federal government, means that states have authority over their public health issues. This includes emergency actions such as quarantine and business safety regulations. The states have each passed their own laws providing emergency powers in pandemics, providing regulating authority over business and occupational safety. These powers allow the states to make such orders. The fine for not wearing a mask is actually a fine for not following an emergency directive or either a health officer or governor. There is a twofold approach. Fine businesses using occupational safety health regulations and fine citizens for failing to abide by an emergency order. The limitations on those emergency orders are very state-specific. Many of these statutes were passed a while ago, and now we are seeing the results. In Washington state, there's a lawsuit filed to stop this by the Freedom Foundation. There's a link to the lawsuit here. We shall see how this all plays out. If there is no rational basis for requiring masks, it's my guess that these fines will fail. In other words, at the beginning of the pandemic, we were told all of science as to why masks won't work. Now we're being told why they are required and will work. Fingers are crossed that some legal action groups can prevail. Actually, if you look at the science behind them not working, it's quite significant. And as I said, there's an interview that Patrick Wood did with Dr. Russ Blaylock, which I strongly recommend to you. We'll have it in the links when we publish Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, but you can find it up on the website or in my Twitter feed, or just do a search or go to Technocracy News, Patrick Wood's website, and you can find his interview with Blaylock. It's very good. And Blaylock has an article on why masks don't work. But again, hopefully we'll have this interview up with Tenpenny as soon as she sends the links. Catherine, recall that Dr. Cowan said that exosomes are similar to virus. I'm a surgeon, but that was news to me. And then more discussion of the germ theory and some interesting links. Is it possible for the immune system to generate an immune response to exosomes in a manner similar to that seen in the case of viruses? Yes. And you've got some links here. This is a great debate as to whether there really a virus exists. A very prominent pathologist from Bulgaria just published an article again in the, it'll be in the best sources, basically saying that no one has died of COVID. And if you hadn't followed John Rappaport for as many years as I followed him, it would be hard to compute that that is possible. But after following John and his ability to prove that the lies are that constant and that big and that many, it's absolutely possible. I will say this, I've noticed the patterns are very strange. We have several places where a lot of people are sick and dying. And the question is, what is it? Is it the virus or is it something else? The infrastructure is clearly being set up to handle something. And my guess is they're very concerned about the amount of sickness and death that will result from both 5G and their injection fraud. Again, I'm going to keep talking about preparing for the worst case. And I think we're headed globally for another big drop in income and economic activity, particularly after the election. And that's why it's really important to think now, if we're in sort of economic warfare and major economic change for the next couple of years, where are you going to get your food? Where are you going to get your water? Where are you going to get your energy? Where are you going to get your shelter? How are you going to deal with schools? And anything you can do to make yourself more self-sufficient and resilient is good. And ultimately, again, this is going to come down to taxes. Why are we paying taxes to a government that is going out of its way to bankrupt its citizens while paying their own salaries? The reality is, I'll give you a perfect example. So Texas was sort of coming out of things, and then Pence comes and visits with Greg Abbott, who's the governor. And the next thing you know, basically Abbott shuts the state down. It's one of the reasons we canceled the Texas event. When he did it, he looked scared. He's looked scared ever since. He doesn't look like a man who's the sovereign governor. He looks like a man who's scared to death, whether they're squeezing him over insurance or squeezing him over the safety of his family and himself. You have to understand, when the central bankers move this big, this far, this way, everybody's got to toe the line. But it's still going to come back to money and taxes, because nobody ever won a war by financing their enemy. And no one ever got rich by financing the company that builds their chains. Slaves don't own assets. I don't care how much capital gains they received before they got the chains thrown on. Okay, that's it for this week. We got plenty of news trends and stories to listen to. Next week will be part two. So this week is economy and geopolitics. And then next week we have culture, food and health, space, science and technology, and the unanswered questions. Then I'll be doing the equity overview the following week. Again, we have Tenpenny and Pete Kennedy coming up, and hopefully Edwin Vieira will pop in before I do the best resources of the pandemic. So until next week, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. Instead, remember, if you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.